Thank you very much, Kelly Robinson. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. That's varying good, depending on what weather you had yesterday. I hope you're having a good morning, and I hope I can help you with your plant questions. Pick up that old phone. Give me a call, won't you please? The number is 888-256-1080 for the Texas Lawn and Garden Hour. We're talking about landscapes, lawns, fruit, flower, and vegetable garden, house plants. If it has to do with horticulture around your house, that's what I'm here for. This ought to be a great morning to talk about the plants at your place. I hope you will call. I'd love to have your call, and I really didn't bring anything to the microphone to talk about if you don't call, so I'm going to be thinking fast if you don't. I'm counting on you. We have about 30, 33 stations that carry the program each week, from Amarillo to Corpus Christi, from Alpine to Crockett. And everywhere, well, not everywhere in between. There are more than 33 cities in the state of Texas, but a lot of the great towns and cities of Texas. So please do give me a call if you will. Toll free anywhere you can hear me. 888-256-1080 for the Texas Lawn and Garden Hour. I've been doing this program about 35 years, and I love doing it. I love the challenge of talking to both ends of the state and both sides of the state. It's quite a varied state, if you hadn't noticed. What happens in Alpine and the Davis and Cheesus Mountains of West Texas is quite different from what happens in the Piney Woods of East Texas. And the same can be said certainly from Amarillo and Corpus Christi or Victoria. So let's talk about your plants. What are you needing to do in your landscape or your garden right now? And we'll get the program underway in just a moment. This is a great time to fertilize just about anything that you're trying to grow. And for most of the state, don't be surprised if your soil test report from Texas A&M comes back saying that you need to use primarily nitrogen, the first number of the three numbers in the analysis. Remember that a soil test will show nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Nitrogen promotes leaf and stem growth. That's the first number. Everybody wants their plants to grow. Phosphorus is the middle number, and it promotes roots and flowers and fruit. And so there are some plants that you would say, well, yeah, I want roots, and yes, I want flowers and fruit, whether it's roses or whether it's carrots or whatever. And then the third number is potassium, potash, and that promotes summer and winter hardiness in tough times. And you say, well, it stands to reason I want some of all of those, but do you really? The soil tests from the Texas A&M lab for many decades now have shown that heavy soils, clay soils especially, accumulate a lot of the middle number, phosphorus. It is not readily soluble. And if we put a fertilizer on that has a lot of the middle number because we want lots of flowers or lots of roots, and we keep doing that, then we get too much of that middle number of the phosphorus, and it becomes detrimental to our plants. Don't be surprised if you get a soil test report back that says, don't put any more phosphorus on. You have gone past your limit. You have too much already. Just sit it out. Put only nitrogen on. The third number is not going to hurt anything, but you don't need to go out of your way to put potassium on in most cases. Now, sandy soil may be a little bit different. If you're along the coast or if you're in the sandy soils of East Texas or some of the other areas of the state that have sandy soil, then you may have a suggestion to use a high nitrogen fertilizer that does have some of the other two elements. But don't be surprised. Much of Texas will get soil test reports back saying use an all nitrogen fertilizer. And then they will go on one step farther and they will say 30 to 40% of that nitrogen should be in slow release form. And that means it should be encapsulated or coated in some way. If you go into a good hardware store, feed store, or an independent retail garden center where you're talking to real plant people who understand these things, they will show you on the back of the bag in the small print, the fine print, inside that box or rectangle, that square or rectangle that has the guaranteed analysis of the fertilizer, they will show you exactly what I'm talking about and they'll explain it to you. So that's your little primer this morning on fertilizers. And if there's anybody still listening, I'd love to hear from you. Don't mean to put you back to sleep this late in the morning on a Saturday. 888-256-1080. This is the perfect time to feed almost any plant that you're growing. 888-256-1080. 256-1080 for the Texas Lawn and Garden Hour. Let me tell you about my book. It's called Neil Sperry's Lone Star Gardening. I had another book earlier. It's called Complete Guide to Texas Gardening. You say, well, what can you do when you have that title already out there working on you? Well, that book was done by a publishing house, and I always had to work with committees, and I always had the hammer hanging over my head of, we got to shorten it, Neil. It's going to cost us too much to print it. And we have too much color in it, too many photos. You're going to have to gang the photos together. And I don't want to do that. I want the photos right by the text to which they apply. And so I said, you know, this time I'm going to publish my book myself. That way I can have Carolyn Sky be my editor. I had worked with Carolyn for years, and I knew that she was the best it gets. And Cindy Smith, same deal, as my graphic designer. And I worked with her for years, and I knew she was fabulous. And the three of us did this book, and I self-published it, which means you have to pay up front to have it printed. I'm fine with that. It's in its sixth printing. It will be the last printing. I don't intend to do any more. I have enough, and so you need to get it before I run out of books, because I'm not going to put it back on the presses. But it's Neil Sperry's Lone Star Gardening. It's probably the only gardening reference book you will need, at least for a long time. It's only $34.95. The jacket price on it, it's a hardback, and the price is $38.95, but I've reduced it to $34.95 to help you save some money and be successful in gardening. Chapter one is the basics of gardening in Texas, the things you have to know that apply to all the other 10 chapters. Chapter two is a 48-page calendar I've never put in a book before. This was not in the Cowboy Boot book at all. It's a calendar of 4 pages per month that tell you what you need to plant, prune, fertilize, and spray in that month in your landscape and garden. And then chapters, and that's really helpful to you. People tell me that chapter alone pays for this book. And chapters 3 through 11 are trees, shrubs, vines, ground covers, annuals, perennials, lawns, fruit, and vegetables. A complete chapter on each one of those. I worked more than a month on each one of those chapters. You get a year of my life, and you pay only $34.95 for that. Everything I've ever said or written about gardening in Texas is in this book. Your satisfaction is completely guaranteed with this book, or I'll refund every penny you spend. I've chosen not to put it in stores or on Amazon, because if I did, they would run the price up on you and you'd have to pay more. This is the best value you ever saw for a book, a hardback with 344 pages and 840 photographs. See what I can do when I self-publish? There you go. $34.95, a signed copy, satisfaction guaranteed. Now you need to order it either from my website or by calling my office, business hours, Monday through Friday. Phone number is 800-752-GROW, 800-752-4769. The better way is to order it right now while you're thinking about it from my website, which is neilsperry.com, neilsperry.com. And while you're out shopping, let me suggest that you go where the real plant people work. That's at a certified, an independent retail garden center where you can talk to a Texas certified or Texas master certified nursery professional. These are men and women who are full-time plant people. They have studied long and hard hours. They've passed a comprehensive exam that's a difficult, challenging exam. It proves their prowess in horticulture. And you know you'll be getting timely advice. You know that you'll be getting accurate advice. You know you'll be getting the best in products and service and advice from a Texas certified or a Texas master certified nursery professional at independent retail garden centers all across Texas. This program is more than 40 years old. I've watched it from its fledgling state all the way until today. Now there are thousands of these men and women in the industry. Look for their name badges. Look for the emblems. Texas Certified and Master Certified Nursery Professionals at member nurseries of the Texas Nursery and Landscape Association. Be back with more after this message. All right, Kelly, thank you very, very much. And good morning, everybody. Welcome. We're going to go to our first call today. And again, if you'd like to call, it is, as Kelly just said, 888-256-1080. We are live on this this unusual Saturday morning, in that we have storms that are likely to pop up today. Hope not, but could happen, as it did yesterday. That was really, it's not good. But the rain is nice, the storms are not nice. 888-256-1080. Let's go to Brian. We have Steve. Steve, good morning. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. Appreciate your call.
I have a question. As you're probably aware, in certain parts of the state, we have a huge infestation of salt marsh caterpillars. And unfortunately, I have more than my share, and I've not been able to get rid of them. I used a product called Dipel, and it didn't phase them. So my question is, what do you recommend to get rid of the salt marsh caterpillars?
All right, what are they feeding on? I have not been made aware of them. Tell me.
Any kind of leaf that they get their fangs on, any kind of leaf.
Their fangs, I like that. And they are on they are on grass, or they're probably on trees and shrubs, is that right?
Mostly shrubs and crops.
Okay. Well, I can't help you much on the crops. That's out of my field, but I would think the same material would work. Dipel should have worked. BT works on almost any kind of caterpillar, whether it's a looping type or a straight feeder. That would be my first recommendation. Help me a little bit know this insect better. I remember you've got a horticulture.
It's not,
I know, I heard that.
I tried.
Help me know this insect a little bit better. You've got a horticulturist, not an entomologist. Is this a looping type of caterpillar, or is it a
It's a furry black caterpillar with some brown on it. The Houston Chronicle ran an article on it here a week or two ago, and apparently they're in certain parts of the state. I'm in Central Texas, but they're plentiful. I could say safely I have hundreds, if not thousands, on my property.
Okay, well, I'm fine. I'm with you. I grew up in Bryan, College Station. Grew up in College Station, but I live in McKinney, north of Dallas. So we do not have salt marshes. Houston does. All right. I think I know the insect you're talking about. I wonder. I honestly would think. Okay, I'm gonna switch to you. I don't think that one is a looper of any kind, and therefore I think 7 will work for you. Carbaryl, I think, will work quite well. I go back to old school. And that should
seven
work
dust?
Well. Spinosad, I'm sorry.
Oh, spinosad. Okay, I've got that too, spinosad.
Spinosad should work. Spinosad should work. 7 should work also, going back another generation of insecticide. Either of those should. I really think that the Dipel should have. I don't know if there might have been a wrong rate of application, or maybe you got a hold of a bad batch or something. But it should have. That's usually the default that we go to with caterpillars. So you might double check the whatever you want to double check on the label and make sure that you have the right application rate and the whatever
I'll
else
do
might
that.
Be
Thank you.
Going wrong with it. But those are your best bets, and I don't think you'll have any trouble controlling them.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank
that
you.
Sort of easy, Steve. I appreciate it. You bet. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye. All right, let's go to Dawn in Winchester. Dawn, this is Neil. Good morning. Where is Winchester?
If you imagine Smithville, LaGrange, and Giddings as sort
gotcha.
Of a triangle, it's right in the middle.
I got it. All right, thank you. That helps.
Fayette
How
County,
can I help you?
My son planted a peach tree probably 4 or 5 years ago out on kind of a homestead property we have, and we're there periodically. And the last week, my sister looked at it and noticed it was full of peaches. And so we went out last night and I picked about 3 that I felt were kind of soft, you know. But when do we pick them?
Okay, well, you wouldn't be
like
picking them in
orange.
April. Yeah,
I'm sorry?
That would be, you wouldn't be picking them in April. That is a little bit... It'd be a little bit early. How large are
they? Okay. Some of them are pretty big. And they're some of them already turning orange, you know.
All right. Do you know the variety?
And You know, I meant to look at the tag. Unfortunately, I'm having to get back to Brian right now, and I forgot to look at the tag.
All right. Check your variety, and this is way early to be having peaches maturing in Central Texas. I would say that did you try cutting any of them? Are they not awfully firm?
I haven't yet. I've got three. I'm taking back to my son since he was like really surprised that he had peaches. On his tree.
I am too.
We haven't. And one branch broke, unfortunately, because it was so heavy with peaches.
All right. Well, what you want to do, Dawn, is first of all, you prune peaches in winter. I don't know how familiar you are with raising peaches, but you prune them extensively from the year that they're planted. To encourage outward branching and to discourage upward branch or upward habit, their normal tendency is to be lollipop shaped, and you don't want that. You want them to be shaped more like a cereal bowl going out 14 or 16 feet, and you don't want anything much more than 9 or 10 feet tall. So all the vertical growth you prune off each winter. All right, so that will help with strengthening the branches so that you don't have the narrow crotches that will pop out of the tree. The second thing that you do is after they set fruit, when the fruit are a little bigger than a marble or about marble size, you thin the fruit. You purposely remove fruit so that they're going to be 5 or 6 inches apart on the branches. You don't want them close together. People say, well, gosh, you're taking away a lot of fruit when you do that. Well, yes, you're taking away fruit, but you're improving the quality of the fruit that remains greatly. And your total poundage when you get through is not going to be that much less because the fruit that you have left will be much better and they'll be larger and they'll be of much better quality. When you leave too many fruit, number one, you get too much weight in the wrong places and the limbs break. And secondly, you get poor quality fruit that you don't even want to bother harvesting or cutting. All right. One other thing that you want to remove those upward branches because there's some bad grammar going on here. You don't want all that stuff growing up in the air because it will shade the fruit and they won't ripen properly. They won't develop a good color. So you want them out on those horizontal branches. It makes harvesting easier. You ought to be able to harvest your peaches from the ground, not on ladders, and as the tree matures, and you want the sun to reach the fruit as it matures. So a lot of reasons you do all of these things. But anyway, I suspect that the next time you go out there in a couple of weeks, you'll begin to have fruit that is a little more normally mature. It will help to know what variety you have.
I wish I'd read that tag.
Yeah, it's very important because there are chilling requirements for peaches, and there are some varieties that are early bloomers because they have a low chilling requirement. They are actually bred to be grown farther south down in the Rio Grande Valley. You get a cold early winter, and they will come into bloom as soon as it turns warm in February, early February or January. And if you don't have another freeze after that, then you'll get a crop of early peaches. The problem is that very often you'll have a later freeze and you'll lose your crop. So you don't want to plant necessarily. But if you do get one of those, then every once in a while you'll get a very early crop. So without knowing what you have, it's kind of hard to give you any kind of answer.
So what variety do you recommend for this
If you have a smartphone, I would ask what variety would you recommend for Fayette County, and it will take you to the Aggie Horticulture website, and it'll give you 5 or 6 that would be recommended. The book I did my ad for. Fruit is not my specialty. I'm more in ornamental horticulture, but the fruit chapter has a list of the best varieties for each area. The state is divided differently for fruit crops than it is for anything else. But you'll need to find out how many chilling hours you have in Fayette County and then choose the best varieties for that number of chilling hours. If I had 1 minute in the book, I could look that up, and I'll try. But
okay.
You know, that's you can find. I'll tell you what you can find that very quickly. In Aggie Horticulture, they have a sheet on that you can access online through Aggie Horticulture on peaches, and it has the map. It has everything you need for the varieties.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You betcha. I hope they're ripe. I hope they're just perfect, and I hope your son's pleased.
I do
too. Have a great
day.
Thanks for the call. Yeah.
Thank you.
Drive carefully. You bet. Bye bye. All right, Tom in Fredericksburg, I'll try to help you with your grass in just a second. You're coming up next. Folks, we have two open lines, 888-256-1080. I love it, having lots of calls. That makes it a lot of fun to do the program. 888-256-1080. Let me tell you about Fertilome and tell you about a product they have. I want to tell you about the whole company, really, because I really believe in Fertilome and I believe in their concept. They work through independent retail garden centers, and hardware stores, independent retail hardware stores, and feed stores. And that's where you go to get to find Fertilome and High Yield products. When you see Fertilome or High Yield, they are sister companies in the voluntary purchasing group. This is a Texas-based company, and this is your assurance that you're getting products made for Texas and being sold to you by people who care about you and who are in your area. Weed Free Zone is a broadleaf weed killer that will get rid of the weeds that you really don't want to be looking out there in your looking at out there in your lawn. If you have clover or dandelions, if you have things like thistles and plantain and other weeds that are showing up in your lawn, you want to get rid of them. Now that it's getting warmer and you say, well, I want to be able to get rid of them and not have to look at them the rest of the growing season or the rest of the spring, you need Fertilome Weed-Free Zone. And ask for it at an independent retail garden center or feed store or a hardware store anywhere in this great state. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dealers who handle Fertilome products and high-yield products. It is Fertilome Weed-Free Zone. I'll be back with more after these messages. All right, Kelly, thank you very, very much. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Tom in Fredericksburg. Tom, this is Neil. Good morning.
Good morning. First, I got another question. Did you teach botany at A&M?
No, my Uncle John taught botany. My dad was in management.
Okay, I took that course. I was just wondering. Anyway, I've got a neighbor that...
I got an A in it.
I wonder why.
And they used to post the grades on the door, and I got a 91.51 posted on the door. I barely squeaked through with my A.
Well, now he's an A.
You know, Uncle John had six kids.
Okay, anyway.
Go ahead. That's all right. Go ahead.
I've got a neighbor that moved in, 5-6 years ago, and they fully sodded the front yard, and it grew fine for a couple of years. Something happened between their driveway and my lot to where nothing is growing on that patch of land. It's probably 25 by 25 square. There may be one little weed here and there or something. Is there some way to, I'm thinking if we were to take some of that soil, mix some water up with it, and then use that water to water a sacrificial plant, would that possibly determine if there's some kind of a persistent herbicide in there?
Tom, I'll tell you, I've had variations of this question asked for 54 years, and I have yet, well, I can't say that. It is 1 in 1,000. Times that,
right.
that there is anything in the soil. What kind of grass have they tried there? Or what was there?
Oh, gosh. I can't even remember what it was. But, you know, it grew fine for 2 or 3 years. It was just beautiful.
Was this lawn?
In the show, no.
This was turf grass?
Correct.
This was the lawn? Okay.
Yeah.
And they laid
the sod patches and...
Go ahead.
I said that, you know, they laid the side squares, you know, and just fully, yes, fully coated it. And like I said, they watered it and grew fine for several years.
Well, let me give you some scenarios of things that I see happening all the time. I had this same discussion with one of our son's friends yesterday via text messages. So often people have trouble getting grass to grow, and they assume a variety of things. For example, tree roots competing. The soil has eroded, it's too shallow, I need to add soil. For example, herbicides, for example, a lot of other examples. And they put more sod out and it dies too, and they say it is just doomed. There's something that's killed that soil. And in reality, when I go out and look, or when they send me a photo, I realize, oh my gosh, there's no sunlight in there. And so that's always the first thing I ask is, are there trees involved in this? And so I'm gonna ask you the same thing. Is this area shaded?
Pretty much shaded, yes.
All right.
The caveat
then
on that,
ask,
though.
Okay.
On my side of the property line, I have natural growing weeds, wildflowers, a little bit of grass here and there or whatever. And none of those seeds or anything have spread to that area that is barren.
Well,
so,
right.
My part of the lot is more shaded than her lot.
Okay. Let me just say that I'm asked this probably 300 or 400 times a year. most of them coming in the spring when people realize that the grass isn't greening up in an area. And it's a really difficult discussion because you have to prove all the negatives of this and that, and there's no way to do it. Weeds will grow in areas where grass won't grow. And there's no way to mix the soil with water and do what you were describing. If you want to try that,
okay,
buy some tomato transplants and plant them into the existing soil. Tomatoes are the perfect plants to test for any herbicide residue because tomatoes are the most sensitive plants that we grow. But they're not going to,
okay,
they're going to die because of the shade. They have to have full sun.
All right.
St. Augustine, hear me closely on this one. Everybody, listen to this one, because Zoysia grass is given a lot more credit than it deserves. St. Augustine is the most shade-tolerant grass that we have in Texas. It will grow when you have 6 hours of sunlight or more. It will not grow in heavy shade. The closer you get to the coast, the less sunlight it has to have. Maybe it'll grow in 5 hours of sunlight. And that's because it doesn't go dormant in the wintertime. It doesn't have to start over every spring. But St. Augustine will still have to have sunlight, and it will play out in shade. And so if you look at an area and you say, well, you know what, that does make sense, because look over there close to those tree trunks. That's where it died first. That's where I can't get any St. Augustine grow. Bermuda's out of question in shade. And Zoysia really is too if St. Augustine has failed. All right. The other thing that I'm going to tell you is that St. Augustine has its own built-in problems of chinch bugs and some other things. And so it's possible to have St. Augustine in what you would say would be a good growing area, full sun, and it might die out. And you say, well, there, I told you, that's polluted soil. Well, no, you had chinch bugs. You didn't know it. And it got the grass in the middle of the summer. So it becomes so convoluted, Tom, that it's hard to, without watching the lawn for a few months,
right,
it's hard to figure,
okay,
it out on a phone call. So that's why I just want to caution you into assuming anything.
Yeah.
You need to do a little more homework, probably.
Picture this. Now, there is no lawn. There is nothing but bare soil left. And the rye grass that I have growing in my lot, the seeds obviously are blowing over there, but nothing is growing over there.
I picture it.
It is bare soil.
We have lived where we live right now in northeast of Dallas for 47 years. I started playing football on our lawn with my boys, our sons, who are now in their 50s. On Bermuda grass, And then it got thin, and so I planted St. Augustine. And we had St. Augustine turf for 20 years. And then it started getting thin and died out, and I had bare ground. I didn't let it go that far.
Yeah.
I didn't wait till it was completely bare. But I have all ground cover now. I'm not going to cut any trees out. We're in a pecan forest. And there's no way. I mean, so I've changed over to a ground cover that can handle the shade. So anyway, I've got to run
okay.
So I don't run out. I've lost a call already who's given out on us. So anyway, yeah. but that's okay. That's what happens with this call. I can't get the answer for you. But I
all
it's
right.
Not the soil. I don't think it's the soil. I appreciate your call. Good
all
luck
right.
with it. Well, looks like I got
we'll
a break in.
Got,
yeah, you betcha. Take that into consideration. Folks, I need to tell you about, in fact, in my book on toward page 100, somewhere right around there, and then 143 or 4, somewhere in there, I have photos of our backyard, all ground cover now. You can see what I'm talking about. This is Neil Spray's Lone Star Gardening. It's $34.95. It's on sale. Would be $38.95. It's a self-published book, so I could have it exactly the way I wanted it. 11 chapters. Chapter 1, The Basics of Gardening in Texas. Chapter 2, that 48-page calendar of when to do everything in your landscape and garden. Chapters 3 to 11 cover trees, shrubs, vines, ground covers, annuals, perennials, lawns, fruit, and vegetables. 840 photographs. 344 pages. I sign your copy as it sells and mail it directly. It's not in stores and not on Amazon. I do it myself. This is a self-published book, Small Business America, satisfaction guaranteed, or I'll refund every penny that you invest in it. I've sold upwards of, I think, 87,000 somewhere. I'll have to do the count, and not one request for a refund. So I think you'll like the book. But you need to get it. The sixth printing is what I'm on right now, and it will be the last printing. I'm not doing another one. So get it while I still have some. The two ways you can order it, you either order it by calling my office Monday through Friday, 800-752-GROW, 800-752-4769, or you can order it on my website, and that's the better way, at neilsperry.com, N-E-I-L. SPERRY.com, Neil Sperry's Lone Star Gardening. More after these messages. Thank you, Kelly, very, very much. Be here next week, same time. Hope you will too. Let's go to Debbie in College Station. Debbie, this is Neil. Good morning.
Yes, I'm having trouble with, I just cleaned out a big, large flower bed, and I'm having trouble, and I got all the weeds out, and then now they're growing back. Is there anything that you would say that would be, I know I could be Roundup, but I've got a lot of roses and lavender, and I'm just trying to help to figure out how to keep the weeds out.
All right. Well, you're either going to have to use a mechanical way, which would be either some kind of a mulch that would stop the weeds from growing, and probably a roll, R-O-L-L type of mulch would be one option. Be awkward and difficult to get in there, but that would be one way. And the other way would be to spray, and a straight glyphosate spray applied very carefully would be, I think, a very good option. I'm very comfortable in recommending that. You would use it in a tank sprayer and apply it so with a low volume, not too much pressure, so that you're not getting it on the trunks of the roses directed
okay.
away from the stems. Now, as far as lavender is concerned, that's a very different situation. Lavender is a challenge anyway because of the heat and the humidity in Brazos County. And so you're going to have to probably deal with that with mulch in some way, but as far as the roses are concerned, you could certainly spray it. And the glyphosate only herbicide, where you don't have the other things added in with the glyphosate, would not do anything in the soil. It does not go into the soil.
Is that like the Roundup, or is that?
That's the original Roundup that does not have any of the other things added to it.
Okay.
Just when you look at the label, it just says glyphosate. There are other products, other brands also. It's not just Roundup ES.
Okay.
And I'm comfortable in recommending that. The studies, I realize that there are all kinds of lawsuits going on, all that.
Right.
It's not like you're out there using it 80 times a day in the first place. Secondly, I'll let you look at the
I wondered about the 30% vinegar. Does that work or no?
It will burn the weeds, and they'll come right back.
Okay. So that doesn't really work. Okay.
I have never been willing to recommend that nor to accept ads for it.
Okay. All right, then. Thank you so much.
You are welcome so much. Thanks for the call very much. All right, let me tell you about Neil Sperry's eGardens, folks. This is my free electronic newsletter that comes out on Thursday nights right after 6 p.m. And I have something very special, a couple of things very special in store for you this coming Thursday. Very unusual and very different from anything we've ever had in 20 years of doing eGardens. So I hope you'll sign up for this one especially. And if you already are signed up, be sure to open this one. But in the meanwhile, let me tell you that eGardens always has five stories. One of them is always a featured plant of the week. One of them is always my answers to your garden questions. And one of them is always Gardening This Weekend, where I tell you about things that need to be done that weekend. And if you want to see what eGardens looks like and see if you want to sign up for it, simply go to my website. That's where you do sign up for it. And that's at neilsperry.com. Same place you go to buy my book, neilsperry.com. And then click on the eGardens tab and you'll see where you can sign up. And you'll also see where you can see the most recent issue. And you'll be seeing the most recent issue. The next one is the one I was talking about at the beginning. So it's at neilsperry.com and click on eGardens. Then one more time, I want to remind you that when you want the most accurate help and advice that you can find anywhere in the nursery industry, you want to go to a Texas certified or Texas Master certified nursery professional. That's a man or woman who is a member of the Texas Nursery and Landscape Association. And he or she has studied long and hard hours. They've passed a very difficult exam that proves that they know what they're talking about, that their advice is timely and reliable. The products that they sell are outstanding, and they are real pro, full-time, year-round nursery people. That's what I want. These are the people I want to recommend to you. And this is not the national box stores that are sometimes selling plants and sometimes selling other stuff. These are the people that are always in it for you. Texas certified and Texas master certified nursery professionals. I've watched this from the time that there were just a few, maybe a few dozen certified nursery professionals in Texas, all the way from the beginning until now, while there are thousands across the state of Texas. Look for their name badges and emblems, Texas certified and master certified nursery professionals at member nurseries of the Great Texas Nursery and Landscape Association. I'll be back with more after this message. All right, Kelly, thank you very, very much. We have only about a minute left in the program, so let me not try to get any more calls at this point. I want to tell you that if you are interested in planting new turf grass, new sod, this is the perfect time to do it, the best couple of weeks of the entire year. And the reason I say that is because the soils are warm. The grass will establish well now. The air temperature is warm, so the grass will establish quickly now. It's not hot yet, so it's not going to be that hard to get it established without it just burning up. Won't be burning up overnight when it's trucked from the sod farm to the vendor that will be buying it, will be selling it to you. And then it'll be easy to get it established. If you wait until the middle of summer, it's going to be so hard to keep it green. It'll still survive, but it's just a lot easier now. Same with seeding Bermuda. It's a lot easier in May than it is in July. You need to just take really good care of your turf and get it off to a good start. There's a great deal of take-all root rot in St. Augustine right now. Azoxystrobin is probably your best bet to help it. It is a fungicide. Your nursery can help you with that. So our feed store or hardware store. Hey, folks, thanks for listening, and we will be back next Saturday, same time. Thank you. Until then, happy gardening.